Yeah.
Right, can you all see that? Do we need to move? No, that should be fine. Morning. Wasn't that inspiring? I nearly said expiring, but that's just me. I love thinking about how we can be relevant, and that's partly how I've ended up doing what I'm doing. So just a brief introduction. So this is me at the moment. So I'm based at Durham University, so I got up very early and got a lift with Lindsay yesterday. I do that 80% of my time. I've just found out we haven't got any funding to continue my contract, so wavering between excitement at what is next and fear. But hopefully some of the other stuff I've done might kick off. So February last year, published a book called Raising Children in a Digital Age that's done really well. It's just about to be translated into Chinese and Italian. I won't be able to proofread those. I don't speak either of those languages. So that's just a kind of brief introduction. And I've tried to put the hashtag at the top of each corner. So those of you who are into Twitter, give it a go. Strangely enough, I won't be tweeting throughout this session. So, what did I put next? So, I think it's quite good to come back to the Bible verse every single time. And I think what I'm particularly interested in when we're looking at the digital and what we're doing is, unlike the culture around you always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings out the best of you. So what can we do that's maybe a little bit countercultural? How much can we kind of understand what's going on online? So I'm mixing it in between a kind of being comfortable in yourself and knowing what your values are and drawing on the digital, because I see digital as very much as part of our whole lives. I don't know how many of you love using digital. Both hands. The first thing I thought of when I got sent details of what I'd be talking about was this phrase. How many of you have heard this? Be yourself, everyone else is taken. I had to look up who it was. It was Oscar Wilde. And just really thinking about how important that is for us. And I found it, this is not the first time I will have been made redundant. And last time, actually, I got paid off with some money and I went travelling. And I did exactly what I wanted for about a year. And it's given me so much more confidence to do the stuff that I think I'm hopefully good at. She says, with imposter syndrome slightly leaking out in that sentence. And so just having a go at experimenting at things. So I don't know how many of you have ever seen these on Facebook. I have had just a bit of fun looking for some of this stuff. They're called Queenisms, and they produce one every day using kind of vintage photo. And I'll read it to you. When she was younger, she had spent a lot of time trying to look and be like everybody else so she would fit in. She had finally decided to let the world see who she really was. Of course, she was frightened, but she found the freedom of living without secrets made her absolutely giddy with joy. Isn't that lovely? Some of them are a bit more random than that, but I only had to go back about five to find one that I wanted to use in this session. So part of what I've done in this session is look at things that have inspired me online and think about how that can be kind of part of our everyday journey. So I wanted to ask you, this is my Twitter profile picture. I wanted to ask you, when you look at that, what do you think that tells you about me just in that one picture that flicks up in front of people? Happy? Yep. Author? What was? Fun loving? A mum? No? Interesting though, that's what you quirky. I like that. Intelligent. Ah. They are real glasses, they're not. No, but it is always, it's interesting, isn't it? The power of the visual that can give you a sense of who someone is. I'm not particularly good at selfies. So that was about the 20th selfie I took. Yeah. And just that little Instagram filter on it, yeah, shows I'm that little bit techie. So it was trying to give that sense of, it's not all about the book. I was trying to avoid that classic I've been on TV photo, which lots of people have got. And it's just thinking, what does your profile picture say to people? Your Facebook profile picture or your Twitter picture. Twitter one I tend to leave the same most of the time because people tend to skim read Twitter. So if you change your picture a lot, people don't spot you. Whereas Facebook, I'll swap all the time. Facebook at the moment is me sitting on a massive pile of beanbags. I was at a work event and someone said, you're not busy. So the thing about that, I'm just totally ignoring all my notes, actually. I'm just freewheeling. So bringing it back to sort of the Christian angle on that, this is Dave Wilkinson, who's the principal of St John's College, and we run a week every year called Media Lit, which is really intensively about kind of communicating in a contemporary world the gospel. And I love this phrase, God is a communicating God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. God is extravagant in communication. He is not a silent God who has to be tempted into communicating with his people. And if we're made in the image of God, how much does God, A, want us to talk to him, two-way conversation, not those, yeah, I'll have a new car, please, type conversations, but sort of proper conversation. And this has come from someone who doesn't think she's particularly good at prayer. I don't think any of us think we are. But also, if we're made in the image of God, how much can we communicate with other people? And that's what I loved about kind of what Lawrence was saying about the values that we're communicating and the relevancy of what we're communicating. And it's journeying along with people. And I think that's particularly what we do in social media. You're friends with these people. I ran a course last year and someone came up to me and showed me his Facebook page and it was just Bible verse after Bible verse after Bible verse. You say, well, it's very nice, but it's got no personality. No one has any sense what relevance those Bible verses have for you. And it's not really giving sense that you have a full life. You sound like a kind of a bit of a Bible bot. How do you inject the personality but show that God's important to you? I just picked this up. Sherry Turkle's written a book called Alone Together, which you may have a sense she's not overly optimistic about what the digital does. She was setting up this idea that I share, therefore I am. And it is thinking about how much do we live our lives like that? Does something only exist because we've shared it? Why are we sharing? Is it for ourselves? Is it for other people? I end up having a lot of conversations with people about tweeting in church and the idea of whether that's helpful or not. So people will say, it's not helpful, you're not paying attention. And I say, well, when you're writing in a notebook, does that mean you're not paying attention either? It's knowing kind of what works for you. And also thinking that for lots of people, they're not actively ignoring church. They're not even thinking about it. And they're probably the only way they're going to connect is with friends. If we go inside the church, draw that massive door, and never show them what's going on inside there, how are they going to have any sense that it's relevant, important, interesting for us to engage with? So it's kind of thinking about what we share and how much of what we share. I'm just trying to remember what my next slide is. If an alien, ignoring the fact that there probably aren't any, visited and all they had to see was your Facebook page or other public profile, what would their perception of your life be? So I want to give you a chance to chat to the person next to you for a couple of minutes about this and think about, is it all joyful, joyful? Is it all God? Is it no God? Is it all misery? Where's the balance? What's it okay to share? There's no right or wrong answers in any of this. Just a chance to have a quick chat. Okay, let's see what some of those kind of things were. Anything that's sort of particularly shareable out of your conversations? Are you going to move that microphone stand? Anything particular come out of your conversations in that?
How things are not that personal. So we were just saying about how, whether it's a photograph on Instagram or Facebook, that it's more... It tends to be more kind of, not mindless, but the simple things in life, nothing too deep, nothing too heavy, and therefore commenting on God or other things like that don't tend to happen. I mean, my personal thing is I find that the tone that happens on Facebook and various other social media networks concerns me, that people might not get what I'm saying, or whereas when I'm face to face with somebody, I feel I can explain things better and people understand where I'm coming from. Whereas writing, I find it harder. So for me, things like Facebook tend to be quite, you know, photograph of kids, where I've been for the day, you know, really simple things. But then it probably doesn't give a proper overview of my life and what I'm doing, unless there's little comments about something that somebody else has put, where I kind of think, do you know what, I can't just leave that. I have to kind of show some sort of opinion. So I don't know, that was...
And I don't think there's a wrong way of doing these things. I think it's about that we're thinking about it and that we're using some wisdom in how we use it, and thinking, you know, is that helpful? Is it not helpful? The same as we should with... Did you want to... No. Anything else particularly come out of conversations?
I was thinking it's a difficult balance between, you don't want to look at people's Facebook and it or portray that your life is perfect. So it's like, we're here, we're doing this, we're doing that, the kids fantastic, look at me, they're all stars. Oh, look, it's the parents even again, all A stars, you know, and you're sat there and you haven't got a child with A stars. So you don't want to be pushing something that's a false image, but neither do you want to be there going, life's awful, you know, oh no, what happened, dot, dot, dot. You know, it's trying to get that balance between, this is real life, rubbish happens to me, but also, and getting that balance is difficult because not everyone on Facebook wants to know that you've had a really bad day, because that's what I use my WhatsApp for my really close friends, who I say I've had a bad day. But it's just you don't want to be this looking like life's perfect and just putting all just good stuff. I don't know how that balance is or works.
And I'm not sure any of us have entirely worked that out. Part of what I was thinking about with this was the idea of Photoshop selves that people talk about, is that people do tend to Photoshop their lives. And people think that people particularly do this online. But I'm quite interested in where the balance is. You know, I've put makeup on today and that kind of thing. So I've already Photoshopped myself before, I could have come last night in pyjamas, but this morning probably wouldn't have not been quite the right thing. And a lot of it's about thinking about context. So like you, I've got a private Facebook group where I rant, but my Facebook quite clearly shows that I'm kind of dealing with other stuff. But then having said that, I've known for 4 weeks that my contract wasn't going to be renewed, but I couldn't go public about it till Friday. And so just because you can press publish doesn't mean you do, but it's how do you show people that you have a kind of normal life. And I think each of us kind of have to experiment with that on a different level. Because sometimes I don't understand why people follow me on kind of Facebook and Twitter. I'm just enjoying myself half the time. And for some reason that seems to work. But people do like authenticity. They like vulnerability. They like a bit of humour. And a lot of what we talk about online is we tend to say that kind of what happens online is human nature amplified. So if you're kind of a grumpy guts offline, you're probably going to be a grumpy guts online. If you're happy clappy, you're probably going to be like that online. There are exceptions, obviously, and people will experiment with their identity online. But a lot of it is fairly consistent with what happens offline. So when people talk about even things like cyberbullying and that kind of thing, it does tend to be the people who would have been bullied offline, because they demonstrate certain personality traits that tend to attract. So I'm coming from a historical background originally, I'm quite interested in seeing how much of what's happening is what's happened before, possibly in an accelerated and slightly different form, and what's actually changed entirely. So but I think it's good to think about what we're kind of representing. Are we a kind of Bible bot, or are we just, you know, are we oversharing? Are we undersharing? One of my friends has this phrase which he calls HALT, which is, are you hungry, angry, lonely or tired? It's probably not the best time to be pressing send on something. So because you'll probably send something you regret. There are the people who you say, actually, if you're lonely, that's probably a time when you really want to connect with people. But I think you then need to be more careful about what you're sending. Because the thing is with ones and zeros is that they never forget. They're not quite yesterday's chip paper in the same way as paper is. So it's thinking about how that kind of works. And thinking about the idea, I try and discourage people from using the terms real and virtual, and use online and offline, although for a lot of younger people, you don't even think about online. There's no distinction. They just are. But for those of us who are a bit older, if we talk about real life and virtual lives, it gives a sense that virtual is not real, and therefore what you do in there has no consequences. You can do some stuff that's a bit different, but really, if you tell someone you hate them on Facebook, that is going to affect the next conversation you have with that person face to face. So seeing how all those kind of things come through, I travelled in Asia quite a lot, and I brought back a t-shirt that said same, same, but different. And that's what I think a lot of online is. It's communication, it's relationship, it's social. It behaves a bit differently. If you're using kind of academic languages, there's a guy called Gibson who talks about affordances, and she promptly forgets the other word that was in her head 2 seconds ago. Constraints, that's the one. So like with a microphone, when that was invented, I can now talk to a larger group of people more accessibly, but I can't have a private conversation with someone while it's on. So it's constrained that, but it's, you know, so it's thinking about all of them in that kind of sense. So thinking about the idea of sort of online being part of our everyday life to be placed before God, I want to show this video, which I think quite a lot of you may have seen, but we're just getting this up. It's a couple of minutes long. It's not particularly to do with online, but I think you'll see it is the photoshopped self.
I was kind of always self-conscious, like wanting to look a certain way.
It's a never-ending battle.
And you look at yourself and you know you can never attain that ideal.
As I've gotten older, you see different changes.
I feel like I have some wrinkles around my eyes.
I'm never gonna be skinny. I'm not a skinny girl.
It can be hard when you see models and celebrities and like you just don't look the same. I did not expect it to look like that at all.
I feel like it doesn't even look like me.
I think because I know myself, this looks really different. Why would you want to make someone look so different?
I like my freckles. I think they add character, and the fact that they're gone, I don't even know who that is.
Just as a normal person,
seeing yourself change and your identity changed, it's pretty shocking.
Once someone else has done your makeup and someone else has done your hair and someone's directed the way your body looks and then taken away your imperfections, then there's not much left of who you really are.
This is how I always wanted to see myself, but now that I see it, I'm like questioning why I ever wanted to look like that.
You look at these ads in magazines, you see these women who look absolutely flawless, and you're like, ah, I wish I could look like that, but who really looks like this?
I think we live in a really interesting time where we feel like we have to make people look to the standard that's not attainable for anybody.
Instead of looking at other things and trying to aspire to be something else, we should just be comfortable in who we are and just try to be our best selves.
I think something that everybody should keep in mind is that it's natural to be critical of yourself. It's natural to be uncomfortable or awkward, but you just have to know that the ideal just doesn't exist.
Ironically, advert for McDonald's at the end. But what did that video make any of you feel? Have you seen it before? No. I spend far too much time on Facebook, clearly. It came in my newsfeed hundreds of times last year. Did it make anyone feel anything particular about themselves? I mean, it was more related to a kind of external appearance. Not so much the internal, which we're talking about a lot more. I think particularly at the end when she said, one, they've done all of that to me, what of me is left? That's quite powerful. Because I think that's my next slide. Yeah, so I'm part of this group called Beyond Chocolate, which is kind of beyond image and beyond diet group, which is really these two sisters up the top. They used to be my kind of body size. Scrabbling food out of the bins, which is not something I've thankfully wanted to do, but a lot of people do. And then they got really cross at kind of the pressure that is put on us by society to look a certain way and to be a certain way. And so much of it is about appearance rather than kind of character, intelligence, any of this. And even the idea that we say to girls, you know, kind of, you're a beautiful princess rather than, you know, all of those kind of things. I don't know how many of you have seen the Protein World thing going on this week, the Beachbody thing. Are you ready for a Beachbody? And people are saying, well, yeah, I've got a body and the beach is there, so I'm ready. But actually, it's quite interesting because Protein World seems to be, you know, we all now, loads of us have now heard of them where we'd never heard of them before. And they seem to have put a teenager in charge of their Twitter account, who's basically saying all the people that are complaining about it are feminist fatties and therefore, you know, not worth listening to. But it is thinking, almost like Lawrence said, how do we respond as kind of churches when people tell us that our faith is irrelevant or pointless, or, you know, do we respond like teenagers and go, well, God's on my side, so nah. And thinking about what do we look like and how do we respond and how much of that has to come from kind of what's within us, and how secure are we in ourselves. And this is, you know, I mentioned imposter syndrome earlier. Have you heard of it before? It's the idea that I'm stood here, I've got a PhD, I've been public speaking for 5 years, and I'm waiting for someone to tell me that I know nothing and I don't know what I'm doing, stood in front of you guys. And we talked about it at a gathering of women leaders last year, and I said, I acknowledge it's there, and then I tell it to get lost while I get on with what I'm doing, but I can't get it to go away, but I just ignore it. And a lot of that is, you know, how are we comfortable in ourselves and how can we support each other to be kind of comfortable in ourselves so the image we project online and offline is something that's kind of powerful and that people want to connect with. You know, again, as Lawrence was saying, the kind of, not the attractional to church, but when I looked at propaganda theories from the 1930s, Hitler would kind of say, if I said something enough times, people would give in and believe it. Whereas in the digital world, it's very much the idea of you have to show something that intrigues people enough that they'll be drawn in to want to know more. You can't slam them on the head with something. you need to be something that's interesting to people, which actually probably feels like a big pressure. But hopefully some of this will draw this through. But yeah, the idea that you can be part of a community that shares all this kind of stuff. So this group has got something like 200 people in a Facebook group and I don't know, several hundred people on a forum who someone says, I've had a bad day, I've just eaten my body weight in Pringles. and actually using it as a space to kind of defuse and say, actually, I'm learning to understand what's going on with my body and why I'm eating all this stuff. And actually, I am going to wear a dress today because everyone else can go and get lost. And all this kind of thing. And just sort of cheering people on, which is why, like, you've got a very active Facebook group, which needs, people need to use it more. But it is thinking about kind of what does this look like. So Spring Harvest last year, I got asked to speak on the topic of a faith should not take part in public life, or discuss or something like that, which freaked me out slightly. But I really enjoyed it. I got lots of responses from Twitter about what people thought, whether this was possible to have a private faith in a publicly lived life. And so drawing on C.S. Lewis, no life of faith can be lived privately. There must be overflow into the lives of others. If we're truly sort of living the Christian life, then it's the expectation is that we won't be able to hold it in. We'll want to tell other people about it. That doesn't necessarily mean we go on and do all these kind of ranty things, but just things like, I went to church this evening, I felt, you know, I felt really fulfilled or something. I'm trying to think of language that's less Christian. but just sort of sharing with people. I did it a church I went to in Winchester. I used to share occasionally on Facebook, and I think occasionally is important after church services of something that particularly struck me. And I had three people say, can I come to church with you? And not people I would ever have invited. Because they knew me, and because I was going to say they knew I wasn't weird, but actually they know I'm weird, but it's the weird they like. so I went, well, if you go to it, it must be all right. And it's thinking that we're kind of the way into people. What did I put next? Yes, Nathan and I just had fun putting the woman into this translation. Again, sort of echoing that, Luke 6:45, a good woman brings good things out of the good stored up in her heart, and an evil woman brings evil things out of the evil stored up in her heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And if you see speech as kind of typing online as well as, you know, video, audio, all the different forms you can do these days online, it's kind of what is actually coming out, what is actually being seen. And I don't want you to see this as another pressure to feel like you don't dare press send on anything, by the way. This is more just having a little think kind of before you share stuff about what does it do, what's it saying about me, am I going to be happy to look at this? And again, I think I'm just kind of reiterating what I'm saying. So Francis Schaeffer, if Christianity is really true, then involves the whole woman, including her intellect and creativeness. Christianity is not just dogmatically true or doctrinally true. Rather, it is true to what is there, true in the whole area of the whole woman in all of life. I was thinking about it, just, it needs to get right inside our kind of whole being so it leaks out everywhere. What did I put next? There we go. Oh, look, I'm quoting myself in a Threads article. I'm a passionate believer that we need to be incarnational in the digital spaces, whether those are specifically Christian spaces or not, but that we need to understand how to be resident in those spaces rather than merely visiting them to do a bit of reaching out. So just to unpick a little bit of that, I did have someone who studied incarnation theologically challenge me on this, and I said, I'm not a theologian, I'm using this in the sense of presence, is if you're going to engage with this kind of stuff, then you need to be present. There's no point thinking I need to evangelize online if you're not really interested in being online, if that makes sense. It needs to be, we need to encourage the people who love being online already to be good witnesses in that space and not necessarily feel like we have to do it if it's not our thing. And so actually go on there and spend time in there, be present. And the notion of kind of fully present. Chris Rogers, who wrote the book for Spring Harvest this year, he said he was playing Lego with his son. And after 15 minutes, his son went, Daddy, you're not here. And he was like, yeah, I am. So no, you've been off somewhere else like the whole time we've been playing. And it is, you know, if we're going to go online, we have to concentrate. If you're in front of people face to face, then you need to concentrate. No flicking your phone out to check it every 5 minutes, unless you're with mates who do the same thing. It's all about context. So kind of thinking how that works. Does that all make sense? Again, I thought I was going to overrun, I might underrun, that's fine. In a time of politics, it absolutely does my head in when people don't, they talk about what they're against rather than what they're for. And the Barna survey back in sort of 2007, speaking to teenagers in the States, basically said that most people think Christians are judgmental, homophobic and money-grubbing or something, which is a great thing to be known for, right? So how do we kind of change that perception around and think about what do we actually stand for? And I have put, again, LICC, that was mentioned by Lawrence, life's a peach, not an orange. Does anyone know what that means? So an orange comes in segments and you can pull different bits out and do them individually. So you could separate your home life and your church life and everything. Whereas a peach is built around a central stone and everything has to work together. So life's a peach, not an orange. So thinking about some of the values we can use online. Authenticity, be a consistent you. I have worked with people who've said authentic means they just kind of go bleh, and the whole of their life comes online. No, you still need to use wisdom in what you actually share. Transparent, be honest about kind of what you found, where's the source. I'm a historian, I'm going to say that. It's always about who said it first. But then you kind of giving an honest trail back to who found it. Self-aware, note your tone of voice. So are you being cheerful about something that's not, shouldn't be cheerful about? You know, are you engaging with something at the right level? It's all too easy to kind of like things that are quite sad. But that can work in certain circumstances. So the university that I'm based at, they have a prayer group on Facebook. And the deal is that if you've read the prayer, you like the prayer, even if it says someone's dying or something, because all you're saying is I'm seeing it and I'm going to pray for it, rather than having to write something every time. So some of that's about kind of context. Integrity, own your own content. Don't put something out and go, oh, I didn't mean to say that. You wrote it, you press the send button. You might apologise and say, I didn't mean it that way, but, you know, take responsibility for what you've done. Self-control, be aware of the consequences. That doesn't mean don't do it. If it's likely to have other consequences, think a bit more. Patience, hold the trigger finger before send. Non-militative, how many of you, I'm sorry if any of you like Jesus Daily, but it absolutely does my head in. They have these kind of things that says, if you love Jesus, please share this picture. And I'm kind of like, I can love Jesus and not share this picture. And there's some people who feel like they're being a bad Christian by not doing it, and that worries me. But it is one of the busiest pages on Facebook. So, and then kindness, encouraging others. It's really simple to just go and say, thanks, you know, I heard what you said earlier, or, you know, I saw you walk past, I just wanted to send you a little smile. And that's what I love about online is before, if you went to write a letter or pick up the phone, you had to commit to something quite lengthy. With social media, you can just flick something fairly straightforward and simple to people. As I put, oh, I love this quote. This is Carl Medeiros. I think I've only read the chapter that has this bit in it, but I just keep using this quote. Relax, enjoy your friends, enjoy their company along with the company of Jesus. Point him out freely without fear or intimidation. We do live in a Western country where it's not illegal. So you're not responsible to sell him to them. You're simply saying what you've seen. You're not the judge, you're the witness. So you're literally talking about what you're doing. Church is a normal part of your life. Your Christian interactions are your normal part of your life. But you probably do other things that are not Christian. Well, I hope you do. I remember when Winchester, when we had the Walk of 1,000 Men come, and most of us realised we had no one that we could naturally invite to anything because we were hanging out with the Christian group too exclusively and therefore couldn't draw people in any other way. It wouldn't have been natural to say, do you want to come to this Christian thing? Because it would have looked like, yeah, evangelism rather than just being part of it. What else am I putting there? Yeah, this is this is kind of coming back to what I was saying about responsibility. It's behind the music stand. I'll read those bits again. Are you happy if God sees what you've just pressed send on? Your parents, any kids that you work with? I don't have any, but I have nieces and nephews. I work with guiding and all this kind of stuff. Do you mind if it ends up on the front page of the newspaper, even 5 years from now? Will you apologise or stand behind what you wrote? And can your worst enemy do something with what you've just posted? So I'm usually really careful about posting where I live. I'm slightly drawn back by the fact that my house is up for sale. I'm trying to get people to buy it. so it's kind of a bit of a giveaway where I live now. But before, I was always really careful because I'm in a job that means I'm obviously not at home a lot. I've thought quite carefully about that. My boss says to me, I don't have that kind of filter. I want to be spontaneous. I've just realised I've been recorded. I think he's probably a little over spontaneous occasionally. And so I think I find this quite helpful. So thinking about how it works. What else have I got there? Oh, there you go. So sort of drawing this stuff together, I was asked to do a little bit sort of related to my book, but hopefully it's been kind of coming out anyway. When I got asked to write this book, I said, no, I work with over 18s. I don't know anything about children. But actually what we're doing is I want everyone to have a good experience online, whether they are participating in it or contributing to it. And so actually this book was written for those who feel particularly that their children know everything and that they can't engage. And this is to say, actually, we can all learn it. So this is my underlying, I've quoted myself, I don't know what page. With digital technology, we need to cultivate an attitude of respect rather than of risk avoidance. The digital is a part of our everyday lives and it's not going to go away. There are huge opportunities available for those who have learned how to be critical, constructive and confident inhabitants of the digital environment. And that is what I think is important. We can all learn to do this stuff. There probably is a slight difference between those of us who've started slightly later. The same as kind of with skiing. If you chuck a kid on the slopes at 3, they'll just go shooting past you because they've got no fear. so we might have that sort of thing to get over a little bit more. But I think there's a real opportunity. And nearly, particularly when I looked at all the children's books that were already out there on this topic, they were pretty much all, it's really risky. How do we shut this down? How do we block this off? How do we make it less dangerous? Rather than my perspective is actually there's a lot of opportunities out there. It's not risk-free, but the more we understand the risks, the better time we can have online. And thinking about how many of you have come across this girl? Yeah. So sort of described as the world's ugliest woman. She's tiny. She has to eat something like 5,000 calories a day and she just can't put any weight on. And she just decided she was going to fight back and say, actually, that's not who I am. You're not going to tell me that I'm ugly, skinny, whatever. I'm actually going to take what you perceive as a disability and turn it into something positive. And I'm not saying that would have been easy for her. I suspect she's gone home and cried into her pillow quite a lot of times in between. But to a certain extent, looking again at that Photoshop selves, her public persona is one of kind of positivity and joy. And I think she's just about to do a documentary, I think I saw yesterday. So thinking about if you're going to engage, I spent yesterday, just to confuse everyone, by talking to the police. The 3 regions around here wanted to look at what the internet is going to be like for 2020 and what they need to do to make the internet safer for children, which I'm quite glad they're doing that. And I think the main thing they took away from our conversation is that police coming in and talking to people about what it's like on the internet may not be the most helpful, because the children will have a natural kind of, well, what do they know about it kind of attitude, and actually they need to work on getting a group of people who are a similar age. So although officially I'm too old to be a digital native and all this kind of thing, I look a lot younger than I am, which probably helps, but also I walk the walk as well as talk the talk with digital, and so when I say I don't think that works, it's not coming from I've read a book about it, it's I've actually done it. And again, can we think about that with our kind of faith lives? We're not trying to tell people something we've read in a book. We're talking about what we've actually seen for ourselves. Did I put anything else on there? Is there another slide? Ah, this is what I put at the end of my book of working with children. And again, I think we can think if this works two ways. Do it for them, do it with them, watch while they do it, and let them do it for themselves. Which I think is a really good way with anything. You know, you wouldn't chuck a child in a swimming pool and walk off and go and do your shopping, would you? You need to kind of, I don't think you can swim for them, but you can, well, actually you hold them, don't you, while they're first learning. And sort of thinking about how do we take more responsibility. I think to a certain extent we live in a culture where we try not to take responsibility for anything. There's always someone to blame. And actually, how much more can we kind of take responsibility for who we are, what we do, what we stand for? And even that, as Christians, I think would be quite distinctively different from a lot of other people. Let's see if there's anything else. Oh, here you go. I'm just going to read this to you. It's kind of seen as a kind of prayer. So Saint Teresa of Avila, adapted prayer. Christ has no online presence but yours. No blog, no Facebook page but yours. Yours are the tweets through which love touches this world. Yours are the posts through which the gospel is shared. Yours are the updates through which hope is revealed. Christ has no online presence but yours. No blog, no Facebook page but yours. I love that. And I just think that gives us a sense of what we kind of, what we can engage with. I think... Aha, this is the second to last, isn't it? My friend Bryony, who I met on social media for about 2 years before we ever met face to face. And then when we met, we forgot that we hadn't met before because we're both very like our online personas. We were playing around with tweaking Bible verses. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up on social media, just as in fact you are doing. So a slight adaptation of 1 Thessalonians. I think it's a really powerful medium if we can learn to use it well. I think the church has, to a certain extent, got a bit of catching up to do. I think, you know, unlike the printed Bible, we were ahead of other people. But I think we've got a little bit of catching up to do. And then I think, yeah. How we do? Oh, that's about right. So I didn't leave a lot of time for questions, but I think there was, I think hopefully given you guys something to think about. And I'm here for the whole weekend, so I'm quite happy for people to talk to me, tweet at me, that little hashtag. It's mostly me and a couple of other people tweeting at the moment, so if you are any good, or if you want to have a go, I'm quite happy to show you how to use it. I might disappear because I have to write something into my room for an hour or so, but I hope you found some of that helpful. Yeah, any desperate questions before we change over? No, that's good. Cool. Well, I think there's another session in 10 minutes, which is, let me just have a look. There is...